So, continuing on this topic of refuge, the primary kind of and the most well-known aspect of refuge in Buddhism is the idea of going for refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. And the word for going, gacchami in Pali, it literally means to walk. But to go, I think, is just a perfectly good translation. But I like walking because it implies that when we walk, we bring all of ourselves along. And so this idea of that going for refuge is to bring all of ourselves into the refuge. And so it's something that's deeply personal and very individual and involves a real commitment, a real dedication to really step forward, step into something. And so it is both something personal, the I. There's something that involving a certain intentionality or commitment or sense of purpose, going, and then going to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. And it's, I think it's useful to consider that there's two versions of Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha. There's the external ones and the internal ones. And external are what most people think about. It's a literal meaning of these words, Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. And the internal has to do with how we find the reference point for those or recognize these somehow in ourselves. And so the external Buddha is the historical Buddha who functions, probably one of the most important functions of the Buddha for practitioners is he's an exemplar. He's an example of what's possible, that it's possible to become free. It's possible to really to shed thoroughly, completely, fully all the different forces of agitation, of attachments, of fear, of hostility, ill will that lives within us. And so the Buddha represents that. He's an exemplar of that. And that's inspiring because unless we have exemplars of what this Dharma is about, then we have no proof it's possible. And I think of it a little bit like the in the 1950s when there was the first person who broke the four-minute mile running. And it was said that can't be done. It wasn't humanly possible to run a mile faster than 4 minutes. But once someone broke that barrier, that line, then many other people followed. And so so once the Buddha, you know, showed it was possible, attained what's possible, many people have followed his example and have attained the same degree of liberation as he has. And so to have him as an example and be inspired by that, be guided by that, and to, you know, have sense, oh, it is possible. And it doesn't, that doesn't involve the blind faith or allegiance to the Buddha. The Buddha then becomes a mirror for ourselves to engage in the practice. This is possible for me as well. The external Dharma is his teachings, is the truths, the practices, the what flowed out of him as a way of pointing us to our own potential. And they're a remarkable set of teachings, the teachings of the Buddha. And I still find them, there's a vast corpus of texts that claim to represent the records of his teachings. It's a fascinating body of texts. It's a little bit hard to get into, but it's so multidimensional and so rich in its kind of care in which it really addresses the issues of practice and philosophy or views and self and all these things that we really want to kind of shine light on to really understand and find our own freedom. A lot of what he has to teach is meant to be practically applicable. In fact, one time, in one place, he says that when someone teaches a dharma, it should be practical. And then the dharma, the sangha, are the community of witnesses, those who have witnessed what he teaches, who have attained a similar, the similar form of liberation as the Buddha, and to know that there are these people who, not the Buddha's not the only example. There's lots of examples down through time, and even in our time, there's many, many people who really tasted some of the fruit of what the Buddha was pointing to, and they're there to guide us and support us and to teach us in our own idiom, in our own cultural form, maybe adapting the teachings according to what's appropriate in different environments and different countries and different, you know, cultures. And so that's the external. The internal Buddha is when we see in ourselves the qualities of freedom, inner freedom, and the qualities of compassion or care or love that the Buddha had. And Dharma is to recognize that some of the values and some of the practices that come out of that freedom or to lead to that freedom also is found in us. One of the primary characteristics of the Dharma is non-harming. And so to recognize in ourselves that there is a force, there is a reference point for really not wanting to harm any living being at all. A reference point, a feeling, a sense that where there's integrity, where there's wholeness, is not to lie, not to harm, not to steal. Not because it's the ethical thing to do in the sense of abstract ethics or morality, but because something lives in us, a feeling, a sense of integrity. That's the Dharma that's living in us. And there's the Dharma that's internal is the Dharma that of practicing, of saying yes, and bringing mindfulness and showing up and being settled and keep coming back to these qualities of practice that begin feeling like this is a valuable and important way of being. This is where home is. This is where to not be here, it feels a loss, feels like a diminishment of my life to be caught in agitation, caught in desires and expectations and frustrations and disappointments and resentments and envy and jealousy and acquire. Just you can feel how we come out of harmony, or we kind of a little bit out of kilter when we end up in these kinds of unnecessary and agitated states. And to begin to really recognize these settled states, wholesome states, nourishing states, peaceful states within, is to recognize the Dharma. And to recognize the Sangha is to recognize that the inner Sangha is to recognize how we, in our personal way, live in relationship to other people. That we live in relationship to others who not necessarily are Buddhists, but certainly Buddhists are included, who share some of these values, who resonate with us with those values, who guide us or support us or encourage us to live by these values, by this attention, this unagitated place of peace and wholeness that the Dharma points to. And that we live in relationship to that, to others. And in that relationship, then there are certain relational motivations, qualities that are part of this refuge and sangha. Generosity, friendliness, goodwill, compassion, honesty, that have to do with our relationship with each other. That's to take refuge in the inner sangha. And And both external and inner and the inner Sangha are valuable, and some people will orient want one more than not the other at different times. And but ultimately, the idea is to have something within that we recognize, oh, that's what the Buddha is. Not that we have all the full qualities of a Buddha, for sure, but some things, oh, this is what the Buddha was talking about. This is what the Dharma is. This is where the Sangha is found or awakened or connected to. And so we're talking about an inner transformation that happens in practice. And at some point, as people practice, there's a recognition that of a way of being that is valuable, a way of being that is more valuable than almost anything else. And for some people, they'd say it's the most important thing for them. Not, as I said yesterday, because other things that are important have become less important, but rather let the people in our lives, some of the purposes we have that we live our lives for, some things can be remain just as important as they always have been. But maybe sometimes the Dharma, the practice, the refuges become the most important because they're the very thing that feeds into a healthy way of beneficial way of relating to all the other things that are important as well. It's like the common denominator or the source from which flows out a way of being that really brings benefit to what we love and people we love and what's important for us. So to take refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. It's not a passive thing. It involves understanding, knowing something for oneself. And so with practice deepens to learn to appreciate what we're getting to know. And then to what we're knowing and recognizing, to let that live as a kind of big yes. This is important. This is inspiring. And it's an orientation. It's like, this is the direction I want to go. So an intentionality, an orientation. The refuges are kind of a guide. Oh yes, this is the way. And they're an inspiration. They're something that can be very heartfelt. And for some people, it's quite emotional. That's a very deep emotional connection. So it's something intellectual, something intentional, and something emotional. It's very rich, this going for refuge. So, finally, I like to say that in some places in Buddhism, maybe some of our own Buddhist circles, that what gets emphasized a lot is the goals of liberation, freedom, awakening, and certainly that's important. But for many people, comparable magnitude of impact and transformation and a real kind of turning point in a life that's, you know, as valuable almost as liberation itself is when we really clearly a change inside that is represented by refuge. It's a big kind of, yes, this is what I'm dedicated to. This is important. This is where my faith is. And so this refuge is a very important turning decision, turning point, this is important. And it's said that when that happens for people, that it gives their life a sense of purpose, meaning. It gives a certain order or understanding for all of how we live our lives. So it's and with that, it can give a lot of peace and reassurance we found a way to be in this difficult world. So thank you all very much, and We'll continue on this topic tomorrow.